This is Healthline, a joint venture of WTIC News Talk 1080 and Yale Cancer Center. Yale Cancer Center is a resource for cancer programs throughout Connecticut, developing new advances in prevention, screening, diagnosis, and treatment. On Healthline, you'll hear from some of the leading doctors in the country. Healthline is not intended to provide medical advice. Yale Cancer Center urges you to consult with a qualified physician in your community for diagnosis and for answers to your medical questions. And now, our co-hosts, oncologists Ken Miller and Ed Chu.
Good morning and welcome to Healthline. My name is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm the director of the Survivorship Program at the Yale Cancer Center in New Haven. I'm here in the WTIC studios with my colleague and co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, who's the chief adult oncologist at the Yale Cancer Center. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Ken. Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center is our way of providing you with the most up-to-date information on cancer care every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. here on this station, WTIC AM 1080. Our Healthline program features some of the nation's leading oncologists who are on the forefront of the battle to fight cancer right here in Connecticut.
Each week, Ed and I will be joined by a different expert from the Yale Cancer Center. Together, we will discuss the myths about cancer, the latest treatment available to people with cancer, and advances in clinical research. Our goal is to help give you more information about cancer and also hope. We will answer your questions and give you the latest information. If you'd like to submit a question to Healthline, please email us at yale.edu, and we'll be glad to try to answer your question on the air or to get back to you afterwards.
Today, our focus is on lung cancer, and our special guest is Dr. Frank Detterbeck, professor of thoracic surgery at the Yale University School of Medicine and surgical director of the Yale New Haven Thoracic Oncology Program, and an internationally recognized expert in the field of lung cancer. Frank, thanks so much for being with us today on Healthline.
And we'd like to remind you again, you can email your questions to healthline@yale.edu. Frank, I wanted to start out by talking about some of the myths regarding lung cancer, because there are a lot of them.
There certainly are.
There are people who I've heard say, you know, if I'm not a smoker, I can't get lung cancer.
Well, that's certainly not true. Clearly, smoking is a risk factor for lung cancer, but there are many patients who are non-smokers. And in fact, another thing is that 50% of patients nowadays are diagnosed with lung cancer actually quit smoking about 20 years ago.
I can actually give an anecdote that my mom's older sister, who never smoked a day in her life, in fact died of a relatively unusual form of lung cancer called bronchoalveolar lung cancer. And also looking at her risk factors, it didn't seem like she had any risk factors. So I think clearly that's a possibility. Frank, I think another myth that certainly is discussed among smokers is that once they smoke, then even if they were to stop smoking, the damage has been done and the risk continues for developing lung cancer. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, that's really not true. Certainly, whatever risk you have accumulated by a certain number of years of smoking, that stays with you. But the thing is, if you stop smoking, it doesn't keep on going up exponentially like it does if you continue to smoke.
And in fact, I think there is some data to suggest that after 10 or 15 years of stopping smoking altogether, the risk actually really does begin to come down pretty significantly.
Well, actually, Ed, I think that's a bit of a myth. I think that it has gone down quite a bit relative to continuing to smoke, but it really doesn't go down to that of someone who never, ever smoked in their life. But there's no question that if you can quit smoking, your risk decreases dramatically over if you continue to smoke.
Frank, let me ask you a little bit about screening. What are some ways that people have being screened for lung cancer, detecting this disease early?
Well, unfortunately, we really don't have a screening test. And, you know, like, for example, breast or prostate or colon cancer, we have screening tests. And one of the reasons that we struggle with lung cancer is that we don't have a screening test. Now, there certainly are a lot of things that have received a lot of attention or are being investigated. And it's likely that we will have ways of picking out patients who are at higher risks and picking out ways of investigating them more carefully. But currently, we cannot recommend any particular screening test.
So Frank, there's a lot of information out on the airwaves about the use of high-resolution spiral CT scans, so very sophisticated diagnostic imaging tests. What are your thoughts on the role of those scans?
Well, CT has certainly received a lot of attention. The problem with CT is that you pick up an awful lot of noise. You pick up a lot of little things that don't mean anything and aren't lung cancer, and so you have the problem of sorting through the noise. Probably what is going to be more fruitful is for us to identify patients either based on their smoking histories, based on perhaps other tests like blood tests or other tests that make them at higher risk for lung cancer, and be able to employ CT scans only for patients that have higher risk.
Now, people who are concerned about their risk of lung cancer, what can we recommend, or what can we tell them about secondhand smoke and about other risk factors? Is there a way to reduce your risk?
Well, the clear way to reduce your risk is if you are a smoker to stop smoking. That's the one thing that you can do. Now, secondhand smoke is definitely a risk factor for lung cancer, but I think that it receives a lot more attention than what it really deserves in terms of relative risk. And there really is generally not that much you can do about secondhand smoke. Other factors that we have no control over are, for example, a family history. Someone in your family has had lung cancer, you have slightly higher risk.
I guess the other issue that people always focus on is the risk of lung cancer. But for sure, right, smoking also carries with it the risk of a number of other cancers. So perhaps, Frank, maybe you can fill us in on that.
Well, absolutely. Smoking is associated with quite a number of other cancers. Cancers of the mouth and the throat and the bladder and many other cancers. It's also interesting as we see more and more cancer survivors, people that are cured of cancer, that they develop a second cancer sometime down the road, 5-10 years later, that's often also a smoking-associated cancer if their original cancer was a smoking-related tumor.
Maybe you could help our listening audience, Frank, place lung cancer in perspective in terms of how significant a public health problem this disease really is. So lung cancer versus, say, breast cancer in women.
Well, lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death in men. It's the leading cause of cancer death in women. And in fact, if you take the next four leading causes of cancer deaths combined, it's not as much as lung cancer. Lung cancer causes almost a third of all cancer deaths. So it's a huge problem.
I've unfortunately over the years had a number of friends who smoke and try to caution them and talk to them about it. What have been some ways that you've tried to ask people to stop, and what do you think is the best way to get people to quit smoking?
Well, I think the most important thing is that you have to really search your soul and make up your mind what you want to do. It has to be more than just I want to smoke. It has to be a determination. I am going to stop smoking. I'm determined to do this. There certainly are a lot of aids, smoking cessation programs, medications, nicotine patches, things like that that can help. Once you've come up with a determination, you can talk to your doctor. You can go to websites. There are various places, support groups that you can go to get that kind of help.
We'd like to remind you to please email your questions to us at healthline@yale.edu. We're going to take a short break for a medical minute. And please stay tuned to learn more information about lung cancer with Dr. Frank Detterbach at the Yale Cancer Center.
This year, over 170,000 Americans will be diagnosed with lung cancer. More than 85% of lung cancer diagnoses are smoking-related. Quitting smoking, even after decades of use, can significantly reduce an individual's risk of developing lung cancer. Each day, patients with lung cancer are surviving the disease due to increased access to advanced therapies and specialized care. New treatment options and surgical techniques are giving lung cancer survivors more hope than they've ever had before. Clinical trials are currently underway at Yale Cancer Center, Connecticut's only federally designated comprehensive cancer center, to test innovative new treatments for lung cancer. Patients enrolled in these trials are given access to newly available medicines, which have not yet been approved by the Food and Drug Administration. This has been a Medical Minute, brought to you as a public service by Yale Cancer Center. For more information, visit our website at yalecancercenter.org.
Welcome back to Healthline. This is Dr. Ken Miller, and I'm in the WTAC studios with my co-host, Dr. Ed Chu, and our guest, Dr. Frank Detterbach, who's a lung cancer specialist at the Yale Cancer Center.
Frank, it's great to have you. Let's move on to discuss some current topics on lung cancer. And maybe the first one I'll throw out is, so what are the typical symptoms associated with lung cancer?
Well, the two that are really classic are an increase in cough or coughing up some blood. There are many other symptoms, but those are the two that would be probably more specific to lung cancer.
So is it true that everyone who has lung cancer will always have symptoms?
Well, absolutely not. And I think that's one of the difficulties with lung cancer is that it often does not cause any symptoms until very late, which is why we need to keep doing the research we're doing to develop a screening test for it.
In someone who has no symptoms, is there value to a yearly chest X-ray? That was something that used to be done very frequently.
Well, I think that there is value to doing a yearly chest X-ray, but it is really not endorsed by the American Cancer Society. Now, that's somewhat controversial. It's actually never been formally tested, and there is some controversy about how to interpret the data that we have for that.
So if a patient is diagnosed with lung cancer, so what recommendations would you give, a patient who's facing that situation, Frank?
Well, I think that my first recommendation is just to say there is an awful lot that can be done. We have come a long ways in treating lung cancer, and in fact, we cure many patients with lung cancer. Certainly when we find it early, we do quite well with curing lung cancer. So you should not be depressed. You should seek out an opinion and seek out, in fact, several opinions, I think, to really get the optimal treatment for it.
Is there time for people to seek out several opinions? I mean, I know a lot of patients, when they're diagnosed, feel that they've got to rush and do something right away.
Well, I think there's certainly a lot of anxiety with getting a diagnosis of cancer, and you want to get that taken care of. But the fact is, you have time to sort things through, and you're better off to take a little bit of time and to really have a thought-out approach, ideally to be seen by a team of specialists that are going to work together and put their heads together to optimize your treatment.
Who's on the team?
Well, at the Yale Cancer Center, we have a multidisciplinary thoracic oncology team that consists of a pulmonologist who is a medical lung doctor, a thoracic surgeon like myself that deals with surgery in the chest, a medical oncologist that deals with chemotherapy drugs for lung cancer, and a radiation oncologist who specializes in radiation treatments.
Is surgery always part of the treatment for patients with lung cancer?
Well, none of the treatments are always part of the treatment. Now, sometimes diagnostic procedures might involve surgery where the treatment actually is not involving surgery, but surgery is certainly not always part of the treatment.
Now, can you say a little bit about the ways that the other doctors get involved other than surgery? Because I think a lot of what we think about is operating to remove the tumor. How can chemotherapy or radiation or both be used to try to help you as a surgeon be successful in what you're doing?
Well, I think it takes us back a little bit to the myths. We started out with that, and one of the myths is that if you can't do surgery, you can't cure lung cancer. That's certainly not true. We cure many people with other treatments, with combination of chemotherapy and radiotherapy. And in fact, the other thing that has really come about in lung cancer is that we know that we do better for many patients with lung cancer if we use a combination of treatments, so not just surgery, but surgery and chemotherapy or all three in some instances, or just two out of the three.
So maybe just following up on that, Frank, so what are some of the real significant treatment advances that we've seen over the past 3 to 5 years for lung cancer?
Well, I think there's really kind of four areas I would focus on. One is what we've already touched on, that having a team approach and using several different treatments, I think, gives us better results than just one treatment alone. In surgery, there have been major advances in making it less of an issue for patients. We do minimally invasive resections now through a 2-inch incision. Patients typically go home 2 days later. It's a much different experience than it was in the past. There are much better, much more sophisticated ways of targeting radiation so that you can really hit the tumor and not radiate much normal tissue, so you cut down on the side effects. And there also are a lot of advances in chemotherapy. We have what's called third-generation chemotherapy. We have a number of targeted chemotherapy agents that are targeted to very specific types of cancer, even among individuals, and an understanding of the real mechanism that drives that cancer cell.
I want to ask more about minimally invasive. I mean, a lot of us have obviously heard in terms of gallbladder surgery is done with a scope now, and obviously cataract surgery, which used to be a week in the hospital, is now a much smaller procedure, and people go home. What kind of techniques are you using that you would call minimally invasive?
Well, it's the same principle. You use a video camera, and that's a through a quarter-inch scope, a quarter-inch camera, so you can see what you're doing, and usually several small incisions, the largest one being about 2 inches. You need to have one that's a little bit bigger in order to take the portion of the lung out once you've done all the operating.
Can you save more normal lung tissue this way, or more than you would have done when you started your career?
Well, there certainly are other techniques that allow us to save lung tissue that we didn't used to do very often. But in general, if you're trying to cure the lung cancer, you need to make sure that you are going to cure that and you're not going to compromise that. It's just that we can do that in ways that don't set patients back as much, that don't keep them in the hospital as long, where they usually after a few weeks are actually feeling quite well.
Frank, in patients who've had surgery for their lung cancer, plus or minus adjuvant chemotherapy, as you've already mentioned, what type of follow-up should we recommend to our listening audience?
Well, I do think it's important for patients to be followed very carefully. Certainly we want to look out, is there any chance of any sign of the cancer coming back? But even beyond that, as we've just said before, as we are seeing more and more cancer survivors, we see patients that develop a new cancer down the road. So typically I see patients every 3 months at the Yale and part of the Yale Thoracic Oncology Program for the first year, every 6 months for the next year, and then every year after that.
And what are the chances of the lung cancer coming back?
Well, that all depends on the type of tumor and the stage of the tumor, and so it's hard to really give a pat answer that really applies to all patients on that. But for early stage, it's relatively low. For more advanced stages, we worry more about that.
One concern that I think people have when they're diagnosed with lung cancer is do they necessarily have to lose the entire lung? Is that the case, and has that changed?
Well, it's very rare to need to lose the whole lung. Most of the time you need to lose a portion of one lung, and in fact, most people can't tell the difference. They can do anything they were able to do before in terms of physical activity without really being able to tell the difference.
How long are people usually in the hospital for with this kind of surgery?
Well, typically 2 to 3 days with minimally invasive techniques and more modern techniques.
And so then how long overall does it take for patients to kind of get back to their normal activities of daily living once surgery is complete and they're out of the hospital?
Well, it depends on how high you set that bar as to being really completely back to normal. But usually within 2 to 3 weeks, patients are fairly active and resuming really most of their normal activities.
I want to ask a little bit about the team approach that, there's surgery. But, you mentioned radiation therapy being more targeted. Can you say a little bit more about that?
Well, we use three-dimensional and, in fact, even four-dimensional radiotherapy treatment planning techniques, which are much more sophisticated than what they were in the past. So you used to have to increase the field of radiation by quite a bit because you were afraid you would miss the tumor. Now you don't have to do that. You can make it much more tight and really focus that beam on the tumor.
Now, what is four-dimensional? I can't let that one go without asking.
Well, the fact is that tumors move as people breathe. And so with three-dimensional techniques, you know where it is at one point in time, but you have to account for the breathing cycle, so you have to make the margin somewhat bigger to account for that. Well, the four-dimensional technique actually takes into account the movement with breathing. That's a bit of a simplified answer, but that's in a nutshell.
Frank, one of the things we're seeing, obviously, with the improvements in chemotherapy is to use chemotherapy combined with radiation therapy in the hopes of trying to shrink the tumor so that the surgeon, such as yourself, can have a better shot at really removing all of the tumor. I'm just curious what your experience has been with that approach.
Well, I think that we clearly do much better when we do a combination of treatments. On the other hand, I don't think that shrinking the tumor is really the key. I think one of the keys is that the chemotherapy acts on the tumor cells both where we think the tumor is, but it also kind of nips it in the bud in case it's somewhere else that we don't even know that it is. And I think that's probably the major benefit that we get from adding chemotherapy.
And there was some very, very exciting information in the newspaper and on the news a few months ago about using chemotherapy after surgery, that it may improve prognosis. And that seemed like a big announcement and very, very big news. Can you say a little bit about that and how's that affected your practice and the patients you take care of?
Well, that's really part and parcel of what we were saying about how we use much more combination treatments. And so really for most patients that are getting surgery, we recommend that they get surgery and chemotherapy afterwards. Now, I think people also have sort of a negative connotation about chemotherapy. It's really changed dramatically. Chemotherapy is generally done as an outpatient. People generally don't have a lot of side effects. So it really isn't the type of difficult treatment for patients to get that it was 15 or 20 years ago.
And any role for radiation therapy once surgical removal of a tumor has been done?
Well, usually when you do surgery is a local modality to treat tumor in a local area, and it's usually quite effective as a local modality. Radiation is also another local modality, so usually you don't need to add radiation when you do surgery. Occasionally you do, but generally not. I think radiation plays a bigger role when surgery is not done. And in fact, there are many situations where radiation is actually much more effective than surgery. And I have backed away from doing surgery because of our improved techniques and improved results with radiation.
I want to remind our listeners, we'd love to hear from you. If you have questions, please email them to us at healthline@yale.edu. And again, we're here in the WTIC studios with Dr. Frank Detterbach from the Yale Cancer Center.
Frank, maybe in our last segment, maybe we can touch a little bit upon where we are in terms of clinical trials and where you see the real advances coming forward in the next few years.
Well, I think that clinical trials really takes us from the past all the way to the future. You know, all of the advances we've made are really because of clinical trials that patients have participated in and that we've done. I think that there are myths about clinical trials, that they always involve some experimental therapy that's never been tried before. It really is a wide gamut of things. And for example, if I take a tumor out, do a cancer resection, it's important to not throw those tumor cells away, but to use those tumor cells to study what actually makes that cancer grow. And certainly as we advance further, there are a lot of newer treatments, newer regimens, and if we understand better what makes particular cancer cells grow, we can tailor therapy for a particular individual and their particular tumor. And that, I think, has a lot of promise.
And I think it's important to emphasize to our listening audience that all of the so-called standard treatments that we currently have available to us for lung cancer all came about because of clinical trials. So, again, our view is that clinical trials is absolutely essential in order for us to continue to make the advances that we all so much want to have for our patients.
You know, along those lines, in terms of clinical trials, again, some of the newer information was on a drug called Tarceva. That was again in the newspapers and on TV. What are some of the clinical trials, the results that you feel people should know about related to a drug like that, and any other new drugs you want to mention to us?
Well, it's hard to really go through the whole gamut of clinical trials, but the thing that's important about Tarceva is that it really targets a particular type of tumor and really kind of gets it right at where that tumor cell is most vulnerable. You know, what is driving that tumor cell, and that's where it's being attacked. And that type of approach is something that we've really got at our fingertips. For some tumors, we have agents like Tarceva, but for many, we're not quite there, but we're almost there. And that's why it's so important for us to keep on doing the type of research that is being done by a whole cadre of people at the Yale Cancer Center that is really going to make a lot of difference, I think, over the next 5 or 10 years.
And again, for those in our listening audience, I would encourage you to go to our website, yalecancercenter.org, for more information about the types of clinical trials for lung cancer and actually for any type of cancer.
Frank, a few other questions for you. In regards to patients who've had lung cancer in the past and might be interested, are there things that they can do to reduce their risk of developing a second cancer other than quitting smoking? Have any strategies been tried as preventative agents? Any vitamins, any types of nutrition? Does exercise make a difference?
Well, there certainly have been a number of chemopreventative agents tried. At this point, that's not very. We don't have a drug that we can say, "Oh, this definitely works." Now, not smoking is important. I think that eating fresh fruits and vegetables is something that has got data behind it that reduces your risk. I also think that if you've had a previous cancer, that you really should be seen on a regular basis to look out for new cancers, either new cancer of the lung or other smoking-related or non-smoking-related cancers as we see more cancer survivors.
Unfortunately, we're running out of time for today. If you still have questions for Dr. Frank Detterbach or for Healthline, we all encourage you to please visit our website, which is which says yalecancercenter.org. You also can send us an email at healthline@yale.edu. We'd love to hear from you. Before we sign off, Frank, let me ask you, what are the two or three most important things that you want to remind the listening audience about in terms of lung cancer?
Well, I think, first of all, I think they need to, if people are smokers, they should really try to find that determination to stop smoking. Certainly, that's one of the major factors and something we can do something about. I think if patients do have a lung cancer, they should not despair. There is an awful lot that can be done to treat them. And I think that they should really seek out a team approach to really try to optimize what combination of treatments is going to give them the best outcome.
Terrific. Frank, I want to thank you for joining us on Healthline.
Yeah, Frank, also, this has been a terrific session for our listening audience. And remember, tune in to WTIC AM 1080 every Sunday morning at 8:30 a.m. for Healthline with the Yale Cancer Center. Until then, this is Dr. Ed Chu.
And Dr. Ken Miller.
From the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
You've been listening to Healthline, a joint venture of Yale Cancer Center and WTIC News Talk 1080. Join us next Sunday morning from 8:30 to 9 a.m. for another edition of Healthline on WTIC News Talk 1080.